Warning, this podcast includes sexual themes and explicit language. Discretion is advised. The word OnlyFans is everywhere, but most people don't know much about it besides that it's one, online, and two, sexual. So we wanted to find out, how does it actually work? How do people make money? In this episode, we get deep into the economics of OnlyFans with everyday creators. Amy Unagi has been a consistent OnlyFans creator since 2020. Amy Unagi is her stage name, not her real name. It's a combination of her favorite anime character from Sailor Moon, Ami, and her favorite kind of sushi, Unagi. That's eel sushi, for those who don't know. One of our producers, Aaliyah, talked to Amy on the phone. There are two ways Amy Unagi makes her money on OnlyFans. The first is by charging a monthly subscription fee to her followers to be able to access her content.
As long as you pay the $15 subscription every month, you get to see all the pictures and short video clips I post.
Amy often dresses up as different characters. Poison Ivy from DC Comics, Daenerys Targaryen from Game of Thrones, or Nerissa Akali from League of Legends. The second way she makes money on OnlyFans is by offering specials that her followers can pay for, a la carte.
If you want to see like explicit videos, and when it comes to the explicit videos, I either do like nude videos or masturbation videos. Like all of that is extra exclusive. And what I'll do is send out a mass message of videos with a paywall, and the subscribers have to pay extra to see the super explicit stuff.
And this is how she makes the real money.
I remember when I was going into it, I was like, okay, if I make at least $10,000 from this, I'll be happy. I'll be more than happy. But so far, I've made like over
$40,000. I'm Mariana Scotto, and this is Everyone's Doing It, how OnlyFans is remaking porn. Amy is actually Aaliyah's cousin. Remember last episode how Aaliyah almost didn't do the project because she didn't know anything about the adult entertainment industry and had no connections? It turns out we're all more connected than we think. Aaliyah comes from a big family. She had never met Amy until Aaliyah's sister told her that Amy does OnlyFans.
Because when she gave me... When I told her about this project, she gave me her Instagram. And she's like, oh my gosh, you know our cousin does this. I was like, what cousin? And she was like, oh my gosh, her. And I saw your page. I was like, stop, she's so pretty. Like, how did I not know her?
They DM'd for a few weeks and then eventually talked on the phone.
Hi, hello.
Hey, Aaliyah, how are you?
I'm so good. How are you? How was your weekend?
It was good. My mom, grandma, and sister came up to visit me, so that was good and fun.
Oh, that's so sweet. How old is your sister?
Oh, well, so her birthday was this weekend, so it was like them visiting and also celebrating her birthday, but she just turned 25.
Oh my gosh, dang. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday to your sister.
Amy broke down for Aaliyah how she makes her money and how OnlyFans makes its money. OnlyFans takes a 20% cutoff of all transactions. For Amy, the rest is directly deposited into her bank account.
Yeah, because when I look at the numbers, I'm like, dang, I could have had this much if they didn't take the 20%. But, I mean, it could be worse. They could take like 30 or 40%.
OnlyFans creators get to set their own rate. Amy chose her $14.99 monthly rate, knowing OnlyFans would take a cut. That way, she says she's insured at least $11.99 a month per subscriber in her pocket. Oh yeah, did we mention Amy has a master's degree in accounting? She actually used her earnings from OnlyFans to pay her way through school. The amount of her subscribers changes. Right now, Amy has 57 subscribers, but she has reached a peak of 120 in the past. It's hard to keep a consistent following because sometimes people subscribe for a while and then unsubscribe when they get what they want. A lot of the $40,000 that Amy has made in the past 3 years is by offering specials. She has a full-time job, but the extra money helps. One thing still confuses us about the economics of OnlyFans. If people can find porn on the internet for free, then why pay extra money to a single creator? David Church helped us make sense of this. He's an Indiana University professor who specializes in the history of porn. He explains that the rise of the internet totally changed how people make and watch porn, just like many industries that changed because of the internet.
We're seeing more of a shift in terms of people going online and expecting pornography to be something that is widely available for free, right? We're sort of return to a subscription-based model, but really more focused around not specific websites, but more specific performers or models.
Something we keep hearing about is how OnlyFans is more personal than regular porn. Scholars like David liken it to something called a parasocial relationship. It's an intimate, emotional bond that fans imagine they have with the celebrities they worship. But it really only goes one way.
So there's a porn scholar named Daniel Lauren who's written about what he calls subscription intimacy as one of the things that drives these sites like OnlyFans or Fansly and others of that ilk. So the idea that you, as a subscriber, you get more that parasocial sort of feeling of connection with the performer. You know, it's no longer that sort of anonymous person out there on the internet. It's now somebody that you feel you have some sort of connection with, even if it might be, in many respects, just sort of a monetary connection.
Like much of social media, subscribers have the option to directly message the creators they subscribe to. That's part of that intimacy or parasocial relationship. They can ask the creator to post a specific type of photo, or the subscribers send photos to the creators, you know, dick pics, and ask the creator to rate it. Creators can't directly charge for DMs on OnlyFans, but it's still a big part of how they make their money. Amy will only chat with her subscribers if they are tipping or paying for some of her extras, like the videos she puts behind an additional paywall.
And if they subscribed on a promotional sale and they don't buy none of my extras, I may say hey to them, but I'm not finna hold a conversation with you. You need to like buy stuff and send me money tips if you want to talk more.
Another way people earn extra money on OnlyFans is by teaming up. These are called quote-unquote trade scenes. It's when two creators make a video together to post to both of their accounts. Here's David again.
You know, they're sort of like pooling their collective followers, their collective fan bases, and you know, sort of partnering on scenes and then sharing the revenue.
That's how LJ, my coworker who has the mullet and the rescue dog, found success with her girlfriend Kayla. LJ and Kayla started individual accounts on OnlyFans during the pandemic in 2021. Then they started a joint account where they posted videos of themselves having sex. And that's when they said they started making money.
So we had kind of like three different accounts going. So we each had our own individual, and then we had like our couple account. My individual that I did not focus too much on just because I was like, this is so intimidating. I don't know.
LJ says she only charged $4 a month for her personal account since she didn't post very often. On their couple's account, they got up to 150 followers and they posted about twice a month. So they charge $15 a month for that, plus specials. After OnlyFans takes a cut, we calculated that that's around $1,800 a month.
Anything in the car, anything at all. People think it's hot, it's public, it's kind of risky. Anything like in the BDSM bondage world, people are really into that.
LJ says she thinks people were more into the couple's content, probably because they are two women. But it was also better for her and her girlfriend. For them, posting their sex videos online added a level of kink to their relationship.
I feel like it was definitely marketed as this like, oh, safe, casual, like just make a little bit of cash. And it's like, cool. So for people like me, Kayla, and a few of our other friends, it's like, yeah, this is easy. Like, we already do this. Might as well, like,
of course,
put the phone up, record. Like, why not? 1 second. Thanks, Mom. Thank you. Sorry, my mom's bringing me oatmeal.
That's okay.
I'm doing work, school, and this all at once. I'm a multitasker now.
You're a one-show man right now.
I'm a one-show.
That's LJ's mom bringing her food while we're on the phone for this interview. LJ lives at home. Her parents do not know that she's done OnlyFans. A few weeks after this first conversation, Julianne and I went over to Kayla's house to talk with her and LJ about OnlyFans. Kayla lives with her family in a super swanky house in a gated community in the hills. We had to wait until her parents were out of town to schedule our dinner.
Oh my god!
She just popped.
Oh my gosh, biscuits roll.
What's that stuff in there?
Buttered biscuits.
It's buttered biscuit.
Butter roll.
I don't know how I feel about that.
So good.
I'm kind of getting an ick from it.
Chunky butter. Yummy chunky butter pizzas.
They even made us dessert when we came over.
Are you guys making strawberry shortcake?
We are. We are. With ice cream, too.
How'd you get that?
Biscuit and strawberry.
Yeah. We got ice cream. It's the best.
It was kind of like hanging out with new friends. Normal, except we had to ask them a lot about their sex lives. LJ and Kayla told us they first met at a horse ranch where they both worked. Now they've been together for 3 years and are the co-parents to one beautiful dog.
I'd say we spend most of the time at my apartment where, like, my family is there a good amount of the time, but they leave us alone for the most part. We have my own room and they leave us alone, but her family goes out of town a lot.
That's part of why LJ and Kayla filmed so much of their OnlyFans content in the car. That's the only place they had privacy. Another reason is that the subscribers loved the public aspect. Their car videos brought in bank. What we've figured out so far is that two things help everyday people make it on OnlyFans. Having an angle, like trade scenes with other creators or videos in public spaces, and having a social media presence outside of OnlyFans. A big social media following is hugely important because OnlyFans doesn't make it easy to search for people. Creators have to advertise their accounts on Twitter and Instagram in order to drive traffic to their OnlyFans page. Other creators use dating sites like Tinder or Grindr to build their followings, using code words so they don't get banned from those platforms for advertising OnlyFans. That's how Gilbert, a surfer who works as a maintenance man, got into OnlyFans. Gilbert came by our studio to talk with our producer, Gerardo. He told us he was at a bar one day with one of his friends who was on Grindr, a gay dating app. Gilbert, who says he's not gay, bet he could get more matches than his friend if he joined Grindr.
I guarantee you I can download Grindr right now and I'll get more matches than you.
What happened?
I got fucking blown up. I felt it was a confidence booster. I showed her I got like 10 matches in like 14 minutes.
He figured if he was getting this much attention, might as well make some money off of it. So he started up an OnlyFans account with the screen name Gil's Thrills with a Z.
I was like, I mean, I've sent nudes, you know. I was a horn dog and I was just, you know, I've sent it for free. So like, yeah. What's the worst case scenario? You know?
Gilbert's family didn't know. But he says his close friends were not surprised at all when they learned that he was doing OnlyFans. He said he likes to try new hobbies just for the experiences and stories, or as he puts it, for shits and giggles.
Oh, a disclaimer, I've always been told I had a nice ass.
Okay.
So like, I didn't know, like, even growing up, like, I've always had a big butt and like, uh-huh, people would like laugh at it and like poke fun. I'm like, and then I didn't know it was like a thing. So then when I started working out, like, you know, I got really in good shape. That's when my peak of working out is when I made the OnlyFans. So I was, you know, I was looking the best, feeling the best. So.
Most of Gil's followers were men, but it also led to some hookups with women. One time another creator asked him to do a video with her. She put it on her OnlyFans page, but didn't give him a cut of the profits. He says he didn't mind.
I got paid with pussy, I guess.
Eventually, Gilbert got kicked off of Tinder for promoting his OnlyFans.
So I did that, posted just like one like shirtless seductive picture, and then with my OnlyFans name. Then probably got maybe a couple subscribes off that. But then I got banned from Tinder.
For OnlyFans?
Apparently, in the terms and conditions, yeah, you can't promote things.
Again, the reason self-promo outside of OnlyFans is so important is because you can only search for creators by username. That's what makes it different from Pornhub. People can't search for categories like MILF or lesbian. Instead, they have to find people they want to follow on other platforms. We found that for some creators, you need to have a direct link to access their OnlyFans page. Amy Yanagi didn't even start her OnlyFans until she had a large enough social media following. About 7 years ago, Amy started following a big cosplay community on social media, way before she was doing erotic work. She created cosplay accounts on Instagram and Twitter. After she moved out of her mom's house, she created a sexy alter ego, Amy Yanagi. Then, her followers kept asking if she had an OnlyFans page where they could get more explicit content.
Followers asking, hey, when are you, do you have an OnlyFans page? Are you going to start one? When are you going to get one? I had a lot of people asking. And so when I got to a point where, okay, I have a lot of people asking, so let me go ahead and start it.
Amy believes that having a niche or unique personality is what has helped her keep such a large following on OnlyFans. But it's also a lot more work.
Like, I incorporate, like, my favorite things into my content making. Like, I really enjoy cosplay, and I love dressing up as my favorite characters and doing all that stuff. And the artist side of it, I used to be more artistic with my cosplay back in the day. I used to enjoy, like, making part of my own costumes making my props.
The more Amy got into OnlyFans, the harder it was to find the time to create the content outside of her regular job. Once a week, she spends a full day creating content to slowly post during the week. Lynn Camella, the professor of gender sexuality studies at the University of Nevada, explains that doing OnlyFans isn't just a fun hobby for those creators who really make money at it. It's work. It's labor.
They are their own makeup person, their own hair person. They are deciding what content to shoot, and they're setting up the lights, and they're setting up the camera. They're doing the editing. They're doing the back end of all of it. It's all of the production and the marketing and the brand building and the fan engagement.
Even for a dedicated creator like Amy, it can be hard to keep up.
The way I manage it is that if I don't have the time to get all glammed up and stuff, I just take, like, you know, a quick selfie here and there and just quick selfies and pics in my everyday looks, and my subscribers enjoy that.
And that's not the only work creators say they have to do. They also have to fend off unwanted attention. All the creators we spoke to agreed on one thing. More work means more subscribers, which means more money, but also more problems. LJ and Kayla said the more popular they became, the more demanding fans became over what they posted.
I feel like when you do reach those higher levels, you're getting a lot of, like, subscribers. There are those, like, deadlines of, I expect you to post this many times, and I expect to see this, and I want to see this.
Just like with any business, the creators have to protect their content. They can't keep someone from screenshotting their images, but they can keep them from recording their videos.
On Netflix, if you try to screen record a movie on Netflix,
it has, like, no sound, right?
Yeah, it has no sound. Green was black.
I've tried screen recording, so I know exactly what you're talking about. I was like, let me get my favorite episode. Nope. Okay. I had to try.
Yeah, I've tried doing that before, and then once I did it, the screen was just completely black. I'm like, oh, so you can't do that.
But that's not the only challenge creators face.
I've had some subscribers that will subscribe just so they can, like, ask me out on a date. The worst part of it is when you have subscribers that just see you as, like, just an object and a piece of meat, and they get so disrespectful.
OnlyFans does have some safeguards in place so that creators can protect themselves from aggressive followers. If a subscriber gets too demanding or creepy, a creator can block their account.
I think I may have one where the guy was just being too pushy, and when that happens, I just block them, and when I block them, it blocks their IP address, and then it gives them a refund.
According to Amy, subscribers get blocked, but they get their money back, and that means they could theoretically follow again from another computer. When subscribers are anonymous accounts without profile photos, there is less accountability for their actions. That's the parasocial relationship. They feel like they know the creator and can demand things from them.
You can subscribe and just enjoy seeing me without having to, like, you know, disrespect me and stuff. But for me, I just don't do super explicit, hardcore stuff. And so it's like, you know, I have subscribers that, oh, I want you to do this, I want you to do that. And it's like, I clearly state that I don't do these things. And, okay, you're being disrespectful.
More on the dark side of OnlyFans and whether this new take on porn is actually better for creators, that's next time. This podcast was written, reported, and produced by me, Mariana Escoto, Elias Skipper, Julianne Lee, and Gerardo Chagoya. Original score was composed by Andy Van Driessen, additional audio editing by Jenny Kim. Our editorial advisor is Jessica Langlois. Jill Replical is our audio storytelling consultant. Additional technical support was provided by Joseph Pavlenko and Ryan Osborne. This project was supported by California Humanities Emerging Journalist Fellowship Program. For more information, visit www.calhum.org. It was produced in the Fullerton College Student Newsroom and Radio Studio. Any views or findings expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent those of Fullerton College, California Humanities, or the National Endowment for the Humanities.